Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I am one of your hosts for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg, here with Mr. Dennis Hart. It's good to be doing a show with you, Dennis. Thank you, listener, for joining us also. Dennis, why don't you start out with a summary of Iowa in the news last week?
Thank you, Ursula, and there were plenty of big stories around our state this past week. Let's start with President Trump's visit to Northeast Community College just outside Dubuque on Thursday. The president went to reassure Iowa farmers that, as he put it, they won't be angry with Trump after an apparent trade agreement with European leaders. He also took the opportunity to display green hats bearing the slogan, "Make Farmers Great Again." The president said in his words, "We just opened up Europe for you farmers." He said he had told the Europeans to do him a favor. Go out to the farms in Iowa and all the different places in the Midwest and buy a lot of soybeans. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds, who was there for the president's visit, said that conversations about opening up European markets are, as she put it, hopefully a positive step. The president took the opportunity to praise Iowa and its political leaders. He said in his words, "There's no place doing better than Iowa, no place with better leadership. There's no place with more advanced thought." He said, "I love this place. It's been very special to me." Those were the president's words. The president also offered prayers for the victims and communities in Iowa that were hit by devastating tornadoes 2 weeks ago. He invited the mayors of those hard-hit towns, Bondurant, Pella, and Marshalltown, to the event near Dubuque. Mayor Joel Greer of Marshalltown said he did not have much time to talk with the president. He's hoping for a federal disaster declaration that could bring financial aid to his city. Just days before the president's trip to Iowa, the Trump administration announced that it would provide $12 billion in federal aid to American farmers who've been hurt by the trade war. U.S. Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue said the aid is a short-term strategy that will protect agricultural producers while President Trump works on long-term trade deals to benefit ag and the entire American economy. Iowa Republican Senator Chuck Grassley said the president's plan is encouraging for the short term. The head of the Iowa Corn Growers Association said that when politics or market forces put farmers at risk, the government can and should consider initiatives to keep family farmers on the farm. The tariff war has affected many Iowa farmers who are growing soybeans as well as livestock products such as milk and pork. Iowa State ag economist Chad Hart said the federal aid program will help. Meanwhile, cleanup efforts were in full swing in Iowa's tornado-damaged communities this past week. In Pella, where an EF3 tornado ripped through the Vermeer Construction and Ag Equipment Corporation 2 weeks ago, nearly three-quarters of the company's employees were back at work last week. The company employs 2,700 people, and several of its buildings suffered structural damage, among them Units 4 and 7, which the company plans to reopen by the end of this coming week. But Units 5 and 6 had significant damage that might limit the company's capacity to continue their operations. The company's waste management facility is a total loss. The remaining buildings on the Vermeer campus were not damaged. Seven Vermeer employees were treated for minor injuries at a local hospital after that tornado hit. No one was seriously injured or killed. The company is considering moving some of its work into a temporary production site. A company spokesman said Vermeer treats its employees like family and wants to keep them on the payroll. Meanwhile, the damaged cars and debris that filled the parking lots after that tornado hit them, they were cleared away last week. In Marshalltown, the city is still working hard to dig its way out from under that destruction that was left by that EF3 tornado that hit it right after the community of Pella was hit. The tornado damaged many buildings downtown, including the Marshall County Courthouse, which had part of its clock tower ripped off, and it destroyed or damaged numerous homes. The courthouse may take 12 to 18 months to repair, and some of the civil cases that were going to be tried there will be moved to the Story County Courthouse in Nevada starting this week. The tornado also damaged two major employers, the Lennox Heating and Air Conditioning Plant and the JBS Swift & Company. That means more than 1,000 workers could be without jobs, at least temporarily. But there was good news about that last Monday when the city announced that Lennox would indeed rebuild on its same property in Marshalltown. When Marshalltown Mayor Joel Greer announced the rebuild plans at last Monday night's city council meeting, those in the audience broke out in applause. Greer said he expected that rebuild to cost more than $100 million. No one's sure how long it will take to rebuild or whether the new Lennox plant would retain all of its employees who worked there. The tornado ripped off the roof at Lennox and tore massive chunks from the 996,000-square-foot facility. No one at the plant was injured, miraculously, Employees had taken shelter throughout the facility. Overall, in Marshalltown, at least 4 dozen buildings were destroyed and hundreds more damaged. Several people were injured, but no fatalities were reported. One of the buildings hit by a tornado was a hospital, which evacuated its 40 or so patients to nearby facilities. Meanwhile, those residents impacted by the tornado in Marshalltown had access to counseling at Marshalltown High School every day last week. And speaking of Marshalltown High, the school's baseball team has played a big role in the community's attempt to dig out from underneath the damage. Team members and Coach Steve Hansen spent numerous mornings cleaning up yards and homes of those in need. During the afternoons, the team practiced for its games in the state high school playoffs. This after Coach Hansen told the city's newspaper that his team, the Bobcats, was available to help. And they did help, day after day, all the while getting set to play baseball. And finally, when they played, they lost to Urbandale in the Class 4A quarterfinals of the state baseball tournament last Wednesday night. But during the entire process, they brought a great deal of pride to their community. We will have an interview with Marshalltown Mayor Joel Greer about his community's recovery efforts on this broadcast on Wednesday. Another story that's been making news not just here in Iowa but across the country is the ongoing search for a missing University of Iowa student. 20-year-old Molly Tibbetts of Brooklyn, Iowa, was last seen jogging just outside Brooklyn on July 18th. When she went missing, volunteers quickly joined the search effort with local authorities, and now the FBI has joined the hunt. Everyone is retracing the areas where Molly normally ran. Investigators have also been sifting through information from her cell phone, her social media accounts, and a physical activity tracker. Her family says evidence shows she was doing homework on her computer late the evening she disappeared. She had been dog-sitting at the home of her boyfriend and her boyfriend's brother in Brooklyn. Authorities have ruled them out as suspects. A $2,000 reward is being offered for information that could lead to an arrest or conviction related to her disappearance. If you have that information, you can call Crime Stoppers at 800-452-1111. That number again, 800-452-1111. Meanwhile, Iowa officials say the number of missing juveniles in the state is in line with historical trends, despite concerns spurred by Molly Tibbetts' disappearance. The Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation says about 4,300 juveniles were reported missing in the past year, an average of 12 a day. But the DCI says typically these are runaway situations, with the vast majority found or returned home within 24 hours. Another big story in recent days in Iowa, a state judge has blocked some provisions of a 2017 voter identification law and required the state to restore its early voting period to 40 days for November's midterm elections. The law had reduced that to 29 days. Polk County District Court Judge Karen Romano found that the law and efforts to promote it substantially and directly interfere with Iowans' constitutional right to vote. She also found that the state had suggested no real threat to the integrity of Iowa's voting system if the law's requirements were blocked. Iowa Secretary of State Paul Pate blamed the court decision on what he called out-of-state dark money and Washington, D.C. lawyers, who he said have come into Iowa to try to overturn our election laws. And on Friday, his office filed an appeal with the state Supreme Court. And, of course, another of the week's major stories, the annual running of the Register's annual Great Bike Ride across Iowa, which this year made an overnight stop here in Ames. RagBri began last Sunday in Onawa, and riders made overnight stops in Denison, Jefferson, Ames, Newton, Sigourney, and Iowa City before ending up in Davenport. An estimated 20,000 riders and their followers took part, and they were fortunate to have picture-perfect weather almost all along the way. When the riders rolled into Ames last Tuesday, the sky was clear and the temperature in the low 70s. And for the first time ever, RagBri led its bikers ride through a Division I football stadium, ours, Jack Trice Stadium. They camped at Brookside Park, at Stuart Smith's Mark, and at the front lawns of homes whose owners had volunteered to let them stay, including many in Old Town. The riders came from virtually every state in the U.S. and from overseas. And on that Tuesday night here in Ames, thousands of them jammed Main Street, where three separate stages had been set up to provide a wide variety of musical acts and other entertainers, including stilt walkers and even fire breathers. Then Wednesday morning, they rode out of town, heading through Nevada and Colo on their way to Newton. Ames police said virtually everything went smoothly. But there was a sad note involving this year's RagBri, because one of the men who started the whole thing decades ago died on the Sunday morning the ride started. Donald Call was 83 years old. He was a legendary writer for the Des Moines Register, who's over the coffee columns in both the Register and in the 150 newspapers where he was syndicated typically were drenched in satire. One of his former newspaper colleagues said that Donald Call, as much as anybody, taught Iowans how to laugh. Call and his fellow writer John Karas were bike riding buddies when they decided to ride across the state together for a series of stories in the Register. They did, way back in 1973, and that became Ragbri, which is now the world's oldest, biggest, and longest recreational bike tour. Call always joked that in spite of the many columns he wrote, the first line of his obituary would read that he was one of the originators of Ragbri. For the record, that mention was in the fourth line of the Register's outstanding front page obituary about the great, late Donald Call. And that's your summary of a busy week of news in Iowa. Just a reminder, I'll be back here Wednesday with a look at news from the pages of several nearby newspapers around Ames. And I'll be back here Friday with a look at news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. Meanwhile, what about the weather? Well, I know you've been enjoying all this weather. I certainly have. And it looks like we get to have comfortable temperatures for at least a few more days, with temperatures hovering right around 80 degrees until Friday, when they'll go up into the high 80s into the weekend. Today, there's a chance of showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon, but we're also seeing the sun. Tomorrow should be mostly sunny, with a high near 81 and clear skies at night. On Wednesday, sunny skies again, with just a small chance of rain increasing into the night. Thursday could be amazing, if I may use that word, with 79 degrees predicted with sunny skies. On Friday and into the weekend, we should continue to enjoy the sun, but temperatures will begin to climb into the upper 80s. Yes, August is on the way, but you know what? We had some great weather. And that's your summary of weather and news right at the top of the show on this Monday.
Thank you, Dennis.
You bet.
Amateur radio by morning, up before the dawn. I'm gonna try to talk to my friend in Wichita. I ain't got a dime because I spent it all on an amp and coaxial. Amateur radio by morning, the radio is where I'll be. While putting up the dipole, I fell and broke my leg. I have a scar from getting shocked somewhere along the way. Yeah, my wife will know just where I am, and I hope she doesn't mind. Amateur radio by morning, by the radio is where I'll be. Amateur radio by morning,
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Dennis Hart, here with Ursula Rusenberg, and we are your hosts today, and we are happy to be joined by Clint Miller. Clint is an amateur radio operator. Clint, for those of us who don't know, and we should, what exactly is an amateur radio operator?
Amateur radio is an FCC-licensed service. So FCC is the Federal Communications Commission. Most people know us as ham radio operators. And no one exactly knows where that term came from, but it was probably derogatory back 100 years ago when wireless was a thing and the Morse code telegraph operators were becoming wireless operators.
Yeah.
And so they moved this over to talk about those guys that didn't really do it for a living. They were just on the air and they found kind of annoying, and so they called us hams. And we just stuck with it. And so amateur radio operator, ham radio operator, they're interchangeable.
Now, when we talk about a radio operator, we're not talking about broadcasting as we are right now on this radio station. Whom do you broadcast to, or who do you narrowcast to?
Well, we don't broadcast at all. We have to have someone we are directly talking to. Where you guys get a broadcast, we are point-to-point or two-way communication because we're expecting a response back. And so we have lots of frequencies that we can use. They range from way below the AM bands, really long antennas, really low frequency, all the way up into the gigahertz, way above Wi-Fi and some of the other cell phone technologies.
Before we go on, let's just mention that last month, Governor Reynolds and Acting Lieutenant Governor Adam Gregg presented the Story County Amateur Radio Emergency Service with the Governor's Volunteer Service Award. It's given out to recognize volunteer talents and to support Iowa's nonprofits, charitable organizations, and government entities. And Keith Morgan, the Story County Emergency Management Coordinator who nominated ARES, has described your group as working selflessly and quietly during times of disaster to ensure that first responders stay connected no matter what happens. Now, you're the coordinator of the Story County Amateur Radio Emergency Service. Tell us about it.
The Amateur Radio Emergency Service, or what we call as ARES, is a group of hams who have volunteered their time and their equipment to serve as backup communicators in the community. We help out with technical topics if any of the agencies around have any needs. We also provide communications for local events, namely the Great Ames Adventure Race is coming up. We've helped every year in that event. Many of us go down to Des Moines and we'll help with the Fight for Air Climb, the Des Moines Marathon, Dam to Dam. And so we get a lot of air-on-air experience that serves our different groups around, but we use it as training topics and a good time for us to practice our skills. And so I coordinate the local Story County branch of the national organization. And so I'm an appointed person in local that can work with our emergency managers, our fire and police chiefs, our mayors, and assist them if there's any communications issues. Sometimes we might get brought in if things are so busy and so on the air is just getting overwhelmed in the amount of traffic. We can step in and take some of their communications off of them that are not life safety. Let's say they have logistical issues that they're trying to track and they're trying to keep all of that that's important stuff but not life safety stuff. We can pull that from them and put it on other frequencies that we have available and free their frequencies up, their time to broadcast or to communicate about the really important stuff and let us handle some of the logistical stuff on the side.
How do any of you know who else is on the line with you or listening? If you're making a broadcast, and I don't want to use the term broadcast, that's, we'll say narrowcast, when you're on making an announcement, how do you know who else is there listening?
Well, let's call it a transmission because we key down a radio and it broadcasts, it transmits RF energy out over the air. And I start off my transmissions typically with my call sign. My call sign is Kilo Zero Golf Romeo or K0GR. That is FCC issued. And somebody would respond with their call sign. And I recognize voices a lot on the air of people I know. And if I don't, I just get a call sign and I can write it down. And I can look it up later if I have a question about who I was talking to. And you can ask somebody, hey, I recognize your call sign, but I forgot your name. Who are you? And sometimes it's what they call a rag chew. We're just there to talk and discuss what's going on. And other people are very focused on what they want to say and the minimum amount of information and move to the next contact. You know, if they're collecting contacts or if we're in an emergency situation, it's what is your information? What do I need to know? And then free up the air so that the next station can come on and pass some information to another station.
Now, when you say station, do you mean an individual broadcaster clicking in to go on?
Yep. So for us, a station is where you are with your radio. And so if I have my handheld on my belt, I am a walking station. At home, I have a high-frequency radio. It's a pretty big box, about the size of a bread box, maybe, for some of them. And that is my home station. I have a station in my car and that there's a mobile radio mounted under the dash and there's an antenna on the back and I can talk on the radio while I'm going down the road.
Do you have towers that bounce your signals long distances or how far can you communicate?
There are lots of towers out in the community. If you look around, the things that people would have towers for anymore, the television towers are kind of going away. So if you see a tower out in somebody's backyard or next to their house, that's most likely an amateur radio operator. And so for stuff like FM broadcast stuff and the two-way stuff that we do mainly locally, it's all line of sight. And so height is important to get that line of sight. When you get into high frequency or short wave, then we start having really big antennas and we want to get them higher. But really, those signals are bouncing off the atmosphere, coming back down to Earth, bouncing off the Earth, going back to the atmosphere. And we can go all the way around the world with those.
Now, I've heard there's a tower on Mary Greeley. How does that – what is that belongs to ham radio operators?
It belongs to Mary Greeley, but they graciously paid to have an amateur radio station installed at the hospital. They mm-hmm. felt it was important enough to be able to have their own backup system. And so they put a big antenna on top of Mary Greeley. So the middle one, if you look at the tower, is the one dedicated to the amateur radio that we have there. We use their intranets. We separate the control head down in the ER from the transmitter that's up on top in their what they call their penthouse up on the roof. And with that, we can communicate with, let's say, Camp Dodge or other hospitals in Des Moines, independent of any infrastructure. So as long as their backup generator is running at Mary Greeley, we can independently talk to other communities around Story County. We also have what we call repeaters. And so our current repeater is out on the USDA water tower out by 13th and I-35. And so it listens on a frequency and then automatically retransmits on a second frequency adjacent to it. And so you can take a handheld and go nearly anywhere in the community or in the Story County and be able to talk on a handheld, and it'll cover into the next county quite easily.
So at a time of emergency, an amateur radio operator will go to Mary Greeley and operate the equipment from your club?
Yeah. Our group would provide an operator to go out there. We have ID badges to get us into the mm-hmm. important spaces. And we'd bring out the radio and plug it into a jack. We actually use the intranet at the hospital so we can move the station around to where it needs to be. And basically set up in a corner somewhere, a closet, the desk, wherever they need us, and be there to pass information in and out. We practice with that a few times, through the year. Namely, every third year, we do a real-time national disaster medical system drill where they simulate a disaster in, let's say, St. Louis. If an earthquake were to happen down there at the New Madrid Fault, they would fly victims and patients from the hospitals down there up to Des Moines and distribute those patients into our functioning hospital system. And so at Mary Greeley, we would receive patients through that. And one of the things we practice is receiving patient information over the air and supplementing it into their system so they know that they're getting, one critical patient and two stable patients, and they'll be here in 20 minutes. And so we provide that service as part of their emergency plan.
How many of you ham operators are out there here in Story County?
In Story County, there's several hundred. Part of the reason why that number is exaggerated is a lot of students come to Iowa State and they get their license and then they go off into the world and they don't refile their paperwork with the FCC, so they appear to be in Story County, so we don't know exactly how many. A license is good for 10 years before you have to renew. Realistically, there's 40 people on my emergency list that volunteered their service. They filed their paperwork so that I know who they are, how to get a hold of them, what capabilities they have. And so we've got a list of 40 people that are wanting to be active in the amateur radio emergency service.
Do you all have to buy your own equipment and maintain your own equipment?
For the most part, yeah. We all have our own equipment. We all purchase it. It is not. I don't think any hobby is inexpensive, but ours can be as expensive as you need. There are a lot of radios that are coming out of China that now cost $25, which is just amazing in that we can get people started in amateur radio for $25 and they can get on the air and use the repeaters. The county has worked on the Keith Morgan and the Story County Emergency Management Agency has worked to get us some grants, and we've used those grants to build some go kits, some amateur radio kits. And so each kit consists of a big box that has a power supply, so you can plug it into the wall and it converts it to 12 volts. And then we have two radios in there. One's for public safety radio, so we can talk to different groups around, and the other one's an amateur radio. And so we have temporary antennas that go with that and fiberglass masts. And then there next to that, we'd have another box that would have seven handhelds in it. And those can interact with the repeaters and communicate through the box. And we've got we can monitor the weather from the National Weather Service. We can monitor some public safety frequencies. And actually, some of those we can use with authority. And then there are some what we call mirrors or some kind of like CB where you don't have to have a license. They're lower power. And so we could hand these radios out to community members going out to do damage assessment.
So do you do storm watching too?
Yeah. Every year we encourage our members to take the storm spotter training that they do in Story County.
So are you responsible for early warnings about storm weather?
We have had several of our people that have called in funnel clouds, tornadoes. We get provide on the air reports of hail. I personally have had a few warnings get issued from reports that I've made. A few years ago, there was a beautiful sunny day, and this little pop-up storm came out of the southwest. And I had the back of that hanging was a funnel cloud. And I called the weather service and said, there's a funnel cloud out of this thing, and it's unbelievable. And on the radar, when I got home, there was this little red dot on the map, and the sirens were sounding in Story County. And people, I think, were looking around like, what is that for? But there was legitimately a funnel cloud southwest of town.
Now, you recruit and train more radio operators, as I understand it. Talk to me about that. How do you recruit people, and how do you train them?
So the first thing we have to do is get them licensed, really. Because without a license, you're not going to be able to use the things that we would train you on. So we recruit people through social media. What's really helped is that we've got a connection with the National Weather Service, and they will retweet and Facebook the announcement that we're going to do our amateur radio classes. Also, Story County EMA lets the other county EMAs know that we're going to do these classes, and they can put it out to their responders. And so we call it a one-day ham cram, or it's a one-day technician training. It's the basic introductory license. And so we bring everybody in at 8 in the morning, and we hammer them with every question on the question pool and the correct answer. And the idea is we put all that information into their short-term memory, and then about 5:30 we bring in the FCC licensing team and give them the exam on the spot. And we have, at our last class, we had 100% success rate with that. Mm-hmm. We've done this about 4 or 5 times, way over 95% success. And so it's a pretty cool way to basically give us one day, and we will get your amateur radio license, and then we call it a license to learn. Now, that one day is intense, and we work through lunch. We'll feed you lunch. We'll give you snacks, all drinks. But we go through the whole question pool that day. And so it's, as my partner describes it, that helps me teach those, it's like drinking from a fire hose because there's just so much information. But we don't have to get you to know every question. All you have to do is get the 30 questions on your exam right, and you can get your license. And so I think it's like a 70% to pass. So it's quite reasonable to do that and to get your license. Now, once you have the license, then we've committed to providing opportunities for us to mentor you. We call it an Elmer. We think the first guy that got licensed was probably named Elmer, and he helped the second guy. And so it's always been called an Elmer.
So how many are there in Aries? How many people?
I've got 40 people on our registry that I have all their information, so I know how to contact them, their capabilities. There's a core group of us that are pretty active and do about every event. And then there's others that we know about them. You know, we hear them on the air. But, they have other things in their lives. They're not able to come out and help with every event. But if we call on them, they've got good skills and they can come out and help us.
So if I wanted to get involved in this and I didn't want to spend my entire retirement or 401k on equipment, about how much would it cost me to reasonably get involved with in terms of equipment with your organization?
Like I said, that $25 radio is very basic, and it functions. You can use it. You can get on the air. You can go out and help with public service events. Beyond that, you're looking at to get a high quality handheld radio with a good antenna and a speaker mic, and be able to not have any concerns about your equipment. We're probably talking a couple $100 is all. And so, our classes that we offer, we actually charge $100, and that includes lunch, snacks, drinks, the test fee, and we give you a handheld radio at the end. And so we really don't make any money at this. It's just our break-even point has come out to be about $100. And so that's been a pretty good opportunity.
Let's remind folks that you're listening to Local Talk, and we're hearing from Clint Miller, coordinator of the Story County Amateur Radio Emergency Service. I'm Dennis Hart, along with Ursula Ruthenberg, your host today. Clint, any last words in terms of how people can contact you, get more information? What can you tell us?
Well, the best way to probably get a hold of us would be to go to our website, which is StoryAres, StoryAres.org. And so we have information about what we do and how to contact us. There's also a group called the Story County Amateur Radio Club, and we work very closely with them. Most of our members are also members of the other group, and we provide support back and forth. Many of us that are leaders in Aries are also club officers, and so they have a website, and they have monthly meetings, and do a lot of cool activities, sponsor contesting. If you want to come out and see a station, we periodically will set up in a public space and advertise it, and people can come out and take a look and see what type of things we're doing. So between the websites and our on-air activities, things have just been pretty exciting and people we've been able to brought in. And I do want to thank Keith Morgan with Story County Emergency Management for nominating us for this award. I think we've provided a lot of neat things to Keith through we sit on in the ESF2, the communication seat, in his emergency operations center. So basically everyone that's going to sit in that chair is an amateur radio operator. They were having trouble filling that spot with a county employee or a city employee, and so we volunteered to come in and basically get trained. So if there's emergency in the county, our people would come and sit in that seat and serve to coordinate the communication recovery after an incident. We've designed an over-the-air broadcast distribution network for the administration building in Nevada. And the idea was they wanted to be able to watch TV from over the air and not have to use cable. And so we designed a distribution network and amplification for them. Building the amateur radio go kits that are available. Just providing communication support and technical answering questions is all things that we've done for them.
Thank you, Clint, for joining us today, and thank you for your work, and congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
A pleasure, and good luck to you and all of your group.
Coming up, another discussion about vigilance, in this case, not during disasters, but in everyday life, especially for parents. Last week, KHOI's reporter, Cece Iverson, encountered Ames Police Department Officer Nick Schaefer outside the public library. Officer Schaefer is the school resource officer for Ames, and he was handing out information to parents about cell phone safety. Predators gain access to children and teenagers through apps, and cyberbullying affects many children, adolescents, on a daily basis, and it involves using technology like cell phones and the internet to bully or harass another person. Cyberbullying caused psychological and emotional distress to its victims, producing thoughts of suicide in some who are repeatedly victimized. And it can take many forms, including mean messages or threats to a person's email account or cell phone, rumors online or through text, hurtful or threatening messages on social networking sites or web pages, stealing a person's account information to break into their account and sending damaging messages, or pretending to be someone else online to hurt another person, and taking unflattering pictures of a person and spreading them through cell phones or the internet. And finally, sexting or circulating sexually suggestive pictures or messages about a person.
The iSafe Foundation is a national organization for Internet safety education. According to their statistics, over half of adolescents and teens have been bullied online, and about the same number have engaged in cyberbullying. More than one in three young people have experienced cyber threats online, and over 25% of adolescents and teens have been bullied repeatedly through their cell phones or the Internet. Well, over half of young people do not tell their parents ever when cyberbullying occurs. According to a new national study by Iowa State researchers, this hits lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and allied youth especially hard, with one out of every two regularly experiencing cyberbullying. KHOI reporter Cece Iverson asked Officer Nick Schaefer to stop by KHOI to share some of the information he's giving out at the library. KHOI reporter Kira Chester joined their discussion.
I saw you the other day at the library, at the public library, giving us some flyers about cyberbullying and cell phone safety.
Yes, we're really trying to get the word out. Part of my presence in the library is to get out there and make sure that people are being intentional about whether or not their kid, A, has a phone, and B, if they have it, what are they doing to guide that young person in making wise decisions on how to use it. While the police department does work rather closely with the school administration at the K-12 setting in Ames, we don't necessarily have a formal plan regarding how we're going to educate kids about cell phones. There's a lot of what goes on that would be up to parents, right? There's a lot of personal choice about what goes on and what they're allowed to do on their phones if they have them.
What are the usual questions that you get from parents in regards of cell phone safety?
Well, the biggest problem is that it doesn't get asked until something happens. And so that's why we try to get out there before it happens and put these flyers into people's hands and get them thinking about it. One of the most common things I'll show someone is the calculator app that you can use that's basically a vault on the phone that young people have learned that, oh, okay, I can take this app that looks like a calculator to somebody who doesn't know better, and I can type in on the numbers and hit the plus sign, and it actually opens up a whole nother folder, if you will, within the phone where other apps can be stored, where photos and other things that parents might not know about. So even if they think, oh, yeah, I check my kid's phone all the time, they don't realize what could be going on in the background. And so it's getting out and saying, hey, this thing exists, and be very careful about what you think is safe, because I've had people say the app Musical.ly. People have felt that that was safe. And I can tell you, anywhere that you think is safe, some predator has already thought of a way to take what adult parent thinks is safe and find a way to manipulate a kid through that app and get them onto some other way to communicate.
To protect my children now, because they're 7 and 9, I don't allow it because it's too much. And then you have so many apps that they can be a victim to. So I just don't allow it just because it's so much that you got to monitor. And I just don't have time to sit there and just watch my kid while I'm on the phone. So we don't do it.
You don't do it. Well, I do. I have my son. He's 8 and he has a cell phone. What would you suggest for me to do in this case? Because I'm not very knowledgeable of hidden applications.
All three of us could probably agree we either witnessed or experienced some level of bullying when we were growing up. I think there's a certain part of it that we think is probably always going to exist. Not that it's okay in any way, but we're not going to get all children in elementary school, middle school, to all of a sudden respect each other all the time.
Exactly.
But now the problem is, when we were bullied, we'd go home, we'd be with our family, and we shut it down, right? So whatever we had dealt with during the school day, we now are with our family, we're in a safe environment, our brains are having time to process and think about what we experienced. Well, now kids are going home in the evenings, and they're still experiencing that social
stress,
negativity throughout the evening and even in the morning because of their smartphones and social media. And there's studies that have shown, you know, middle school age girls who are responding to this stuff in their sleep and never actually reaching REM sleep at any point their whole night because they're always so concerned about FOMO, fear of missing out, and things like that. And that has other negative aspects on everything in their life, how tired they are in school. It then affects how well they perform academically because they're tired and not able to pay attention. So I think it's really that access and that constant stimulation that's hurting people. Regarding your kid, what I would recommend you do is there are things that are out there, other apps where you can control your kid's phone from your phone so that they would have to get approval from you through your phone for them to download something.
Okay.
And then, of course, there's a really good website called Common Sense Media, and it's free. And you can go there, and it reviews apps, music, movies, games, everything, so you can be up to date. I know for me, when my son asks me about something, I do give my opinion because I'm in the field where I'm dealing with it, knowing about stuff. But on top of that, one of the first things we do is we go right to Common Sense Media. So if you have a kid who is, let's say, disagreeable, you know, well, so-and-so is getting to do it, or why won't you let me? Well, it's not me. It's Common Sense Media. These people are experts at reviewing stuff. So don't get mad at me.
Okay, that sounds like a great resource if you're in a jam.
Yeah.
You know, I get that a lot with my son. He challenged my views on things, and it is important to have that backup, especially for single parents that
for
might
sure.
not have the mom or the dad present to back you up. So it's just thank you for the resource. I also wanted to ask you, Nick, if I have any extra questions about what the City of Ames and the community is doing to get more informed about how to protect my child from cyberbullying and other things that might be he might be affected by on his cell phone. What are other resources that parents can obtain? Who do I call and how can I get a hold of you?
Online, the Center for National and Missing and Exploited Children, they have lots of resources, so you can go to that website. But really, it's 2018. Anybody who tells me that, like, I don't know, I didn't know this about smartphones, just Google, what do I need to do to protect my kids online? There's more resources than I could name.
Okay.
There's just so much out there.
That's wonderful. And I think it's very nice that the City of Ames and the police department has taken the initiative to put someone out there to inform parents that might not be as inclined to get online and Google it to be able to access this information in a personal way.
I have one kid. And I think, man, I have my hands full. Whenever I'm talking with other parents that have lots of kids, I'm first of all blown away. I'm like, I don't know how you guys do it. And I think if I had to try to do all this time management with those kids and still be on top of this stuff, I would find it very challenging. So when I see a single parent that's trying to deal with this stuff, I certainly can understand the reaction of putting a screen in front of them to get them to quiet down so that you could have 5 minutes of silence to figure out the grocery list and who has appointments where. I just want to remind them to just be more intentional about when they do put that screen in front of them and what the potential dangers are that are there.
Yeah, but it's very hard when you're trying to scramble time to do other things. It's so nice to be able to have someone to let us know, hey, be aware of this.
Yeah, because it's so much. And like, I even had a friend, her daughter downloaded some app and it's some 24-year-old guy trying to talk to her and she's 9. And I'm like, you think this stuff is friendly and it's not.
Yeah. We've had situations where a suspect has known that that kid couldn't be on their phone or had their phone taken away, and they will find a way to mail that kid a phone.
Wow.
You know? So, you know, there's you can never let your guard down.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wow. See, that's deep right there.
Mm-hmm. Or you're listening to KHOI. If you have any more questions, don't forget to go to our website, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thank you so much for listening, and this is your girl, Cece Ivy.
And ice like glue. People are so shocked they don't know what they're gonna do. Call the police, call your mama too. Call someone who cares about you and all you. He's back in town. Yeah, yeah, he's back in town. Yeah, yeah, and it's all over for you now. You made mistakes, Bobby. Now the deal is going down and it's all over for you. Woo! He back in town. If you see him coming, it's gonna be too late. He got your name and number on his license plate. 876-5432. Call the undertaker, make a reservation, one is back in town. Yeah, yeah, he's back in town. Yeah, yeah, and it's all over for you now. If you made a mistake, the deal is going down and it's all over for you. Oh, he back in town.
Keith Allen Band out of Des Moines performing recently right here at KHOI. Very nice. Well, Ursula, August is almost here, and you and I know what that means. KHOI is having a birthday party.
That's right. KHOI went on the air in August 12, 2012. So we are going into our 6th year. Every year we have a birthday party. And this year, Greta Anderson is heading up the birthday party with a generous grant from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. A concert in the parking lot behind KHOI and behind the, it's actually, it belongs to the Ames History Center. And she stopped by the station to describe what's going to happen. So I'm going to play that recording for you and hope that we encourage you to come and join our birthday party.
And we can all sing happy birthday to us, KHOI.
August 12th is the actual anniversary of the very day that KHOI went on the air. Every year we celebrate mid-August, but this year it just turned out that August 12th was going to work out. It's a Sunday. And we're having a birthday party that involves live music, which has been tradition for the last couple years, and a popular aspect of our party. And, of course, we'll have cake and activities inside. So we're inviting anyone and everyone to come and down to the station. Check us out if you've been listening to us and don't really know what we are or where we are. It's at 410 Douglas Avenue, and the party will be out back and in front and inside and all around. So come on down and
Okay, so let's break this down. First of all, a band.
A band, yes, the Heath Allen Band out of Des Moines. He has a very winning personality and excellent musicianship.
What kind of music does he play?
I would say, you know, blues and jazz, where you'll have a solo and, you know, some intricate work.
Can you dance to it?
Yes, you awesome. Can. Of course, we wouldn't have a band that you couldn't.
So you heard it from Greta, come ready to dance,
yep.
right? Plenty of room to dance.
Mm-hmm. And we're hoping it'll be a little shady out there mm-hmm. by the time the hour of music rolls around. The party is from 4 to 7, and the outdoor entertainment begins, however, at 4 o'clock with acts from the Senior Variety Show. The AIM Senior Variety Show actually opens the following week, so they will be very well prepared to share some of their best sketches or songs or
numbers. A preview of the Senior Variety Show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So,
and what time is that again?
That will be at 4.
August 12th.
And then the band will start at 4:30, and we'll pretty much play through to the end of the party at 7 p.m., although there'll be a short break where they can just get refreshments.
How many people are in the band?
We actually don't know. We've got to talk to Heath and find out mm-hmm. who all he's bringing. But because of the generous grant from Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau, we're able to offer the band some money. So that translates into people and more mm-hmm. more and better music. Mm-hmm. So he's going to bring some of the people he plays with who are also really talented musicians and just know how to play together and create energy and share that energy.
Now, you mentioned a cake.
A cake, yes. Zoe Lee is a 15-year-old girl, Ames resident, who I met at the Ames Farmers Market because she's put herself out there, Sweetery Z, and making cakes and pies and cupcakes and things like that, pastries. I brought home a blueberry pie from her and was just delighted with the quality and thought
Where's she from?
Well, this is the interesting. I believe she's adopted. Her country of origin is the Democratic Republic of Congo. In fact, she experienced hunger as a youngster before she came to Ames and has just this beautiful story of discovering baking as a passion of hers and then deciding that the connection between baking and this hunger that she experienced, she wanted to take some of her profits and send them back to the DRC.
So money she makes from her bakery, she has a little bakery business here?
Yes.
And the money she makes from it, she sends back to the Congo?
Or at least some of the money, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So.
And where does she live?
Oh, I believe in Ames. She might attend Gilbert Schools. I'm not sure, but
mm-hmm. maybe we can get her in here to speak, you know, to describe what she's doing.
Yeah, and to find mm-hmm. out what exactly she's going to bake. I kind of requested something like fruity and maybe lemony. So I hope everybody likes that. I kind of suggested that to her.
Were any suggestions made on how the cake should look?
No, I think we have to go with a sheet cake because we're hoping for a good crowd. And so that's what we've ordered, yeah. a certain number of servings. And
so if you come to the party, you'll probably be able to get a piece of cake.
Yes, absolutely.
Make sure there's enough.
Yeah, and good cake.
Are there any other refreshments?
Lemonade and iced tea, and maybe some of our volunteers are just, you know, they just like to bake, so I'm sure we'll have people bringing in stuff, maybe something on the chocolate end of things, because sometimes people just want chocolate.
Yeah, our volunteers usually end up bringing really, really excellent food.
This is true.
It's a tradition of great food at the station, so.
Yeah.
So there should be good things to eat.
Yeah.
Now, you also mentioned silk screening. Explain that.
Oh, well, you know, it just so happens that we've run out of T-shirts at KHOI, as you know. And we love to give T-shirts out as perk of membership to people who contribute their talents. For instance, if they come and play at a Pantorium session for free. And we just like to have people show off KHOI all over town. I just saw somebody wearing a KHOI sheet. Two people today I've seen wearing our KHOI T-shirts, but
That's
we have
excellent.
No more to
mm-hmm.
give. And so this is a need. And wouldn't it be cool if we didn't, you know, have them made at an industrial shop and bring them here, but actually have people have the opportunity to bring in a shirt that is fairly uncluttered with other graphics or prints or weaves and just silkscreen our logo onto their shirt or their sweatshirt or, you know, their
pullover. Now, is this
pullover.
For them to keep or to for us to give to other people.
Oh, absolutely. It'd be for them to keep. Mm-hmm. But the great deal is that the printer we're working with, Asa Wenzel Fisher of 505 Press, as part of the package that we've negotiated, he's going to leave us with that screen so we can continue to make shirts as we need them on whatever shirts we think is the right thing to do at that time. So we will always have a source of shirts, and we'll certainly make extra at the party if we have a chance, or if not, maybe the next day or the next day we'll get around to making some more shirts so that we have some on hand mm-hmm. for people.
Okay, so we have silk screening T-shirts.
Yep. Okay. But one thing about those T-shirts or shirts or bags or whatever you want to silk screen, it should be relatively light color. We're going to be using black ink, not white ink. And we won't just have the shirt with our logo, but we'll also have an option, a screen that has the words, Feed Your Head, at 89.1 FM. And I just... You know, I thought of that one night because White Rabbit by the Jefferson Airplane is one of my favorite songs. And that is certainly one of the more memorable lines of rock and roll, Feed Your Head. And I think it really speaks to what KHOI has to offer, you know, with all of the amazing program that we get, not just locally, but of course, through the Pacifica Network. All of the things that we get to think about because we listen to KHOI, it really is like feeding your head, helping you, guiding your mind into different pathways. You know, if you're not a big reader, if you don't have access to other stuff or you're too busy to do that, you can just tune into the radio and expand your horizons a lot. So, and of course, we have local shows that do the same thing that really make you think in ways that you hadn't before because, you know, that's just the bent of the particular DJ or host. So, and then, of course, the Ames History Center, our next door neighbor who is offering us their parking lot, they're going to be open on Sunday evening as mm-hmm. a special accommodation for us so that if people mm-hmm. get overheated and our place is too crowded, you know, you can go over and enjoy the exhibit. I think it's the last day that their exhibit is up.
That's exhibit about Ames High School.
Yeah. Right? In mm-hmm. fact, you go right in and you see it's your sister's signature. I think it's Annette. I see Annette's signature on a picture over there. That was like, I just glanced down on it. And that was the thing I saw. So
I have to tell her that.
Yeah.
I don't think she knows that.
Right. Anyway. Yeah.
Oh, well, okay. So we have birthday party for KHOI August 12th from 4 until
7.
We have a band.
Keith Allen Band out of Des Moines.
Danceable.
Yes.
Lots of fun. Just generally a good time for all.
Yeah. Don't forget the cake.
And
mystery cake.
And
the cake. Yet to be revealed.
And then also we have the History Center being open, so you can make sure you catch the end of the Ames High School exhibit.
Yep. Oh, during the party. Over the air. Allen Gildehouse. Our live radio programming, we'll be spinning tunes and chatting up our birthday, but we'll be open to visitors. We're also going to be inviting folks into the studio to share birthday stories. So if you have a memorable birthday that occurred to you, you can come into the studio and kind of just be taught how close to sit to the mic and how to speak into the mic. And then you go in and you tell your story, you know. Yeah.
It's fun to come into the studio and talk into the mic.
Yeah.
It's a good time. Okay. Well, thank you, Greta. Again, that's August 12th, 4 to 7 in the parking lot behind the Ames History Center, which is on 5th Street, right east of Douglas.
Right.
Just follow the music. Bring a light-colored T-shirt. Come ready to eat cake and to enjoy yourself.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you, Greta. Appreciate
All right.
it. Looking
thank
forward
you.
To it. And you've been listening to Local Talk. We've been your hosts today, Dennis Hart and Ursula Rudenberg. We also heard from Clint Miller, coordinator of the Story County Amateur Emergency Service, the ARES. They just won an award recently from the governor for their outstanding service, helping with emergency services around the county. We also heard from Officer Nick Schaefer, who is school resource officer for Ames, and he spoke about how parents can protect their children better from cyberbullying and cyber predators. And thank you to reporters Cece Iverson and Kiera Chester. KHOI reporter and volunteer Greta Anderson, who is organizing the KHOI birthday party August 12th from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. We do hope that you'll mark your calendar.
Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. Also, remember that you can hear a recording of this show later today online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during this program. Also, remember the KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Coachella. You also heard music by the Heath Allen Band, who will be performing at KHOI's birthday party on August 12th from 4 to 7 p.m. Mark your calendar.
You bet, and let's have some cake. Local Talk's a radio production workshop as well as a show. So if you'd like to try your hand at reporting, come on down. We'll train you. Come on and join the Local Talk team. Stay tuned for Headline News and Democracy Now! At 8 a.m. and Morning Masterpieces at 9. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.